Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and I am still recording from the convention. People told me, people who have not been to conventions told me, oh man, you're going to enjoy your vacation, make sure you see Boston and do all the sights, and no, that is not what happens here. I have been swamped every day, getting interviews, trying to make content for you guys, and having people reach out to me and be interested in coming on the podcast and talking about their issues. And when I got contacted by... All right, I'm going to interrupt myself already. I have to, because it drives me nuts to see a podcast like this. Like, you can see on the title, it says John Murphy. And so there's no, like, buildup. Like, oh, you won't believe who we have here today. It's John Murphy. John, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, this is John Murphy. And when he messaged me, you know, he's a fan of the podcast. We said hello, and he took a video of me interviewing a couple of stewards, which is an episode that also, as we record this, has not dropped yet, but he put it up on TikTok. And what kind of views has that gotten?
I think it blasted up to like 8,000.
Dude.
8,000?
8,000 views. So I give you guys a sense of the numbers that this podcast gets. As far as I know, this is the second most popular postal podcast behind Corey's. And in the last month, now I've gotten a bit of a boost from being here and putting these episodes out. But as far as I know, this podcast has got like 12,000 views in the last month, which is really good. Especially, you know, it's good podcast numbers. How many views has this TikTok video gotten?
It's gotten 8,720 with a watch full video clip. The whole video is 20%.
Wow. All right. So that's like, and that's in what, like 2 days?
Yeah, 2 days.
Yeah. So it turns out I have to get on TikTok because, man, things can really go blow up over there. I mean, it's going to be probably the equivalent of my postal stand-up podcast where I just do little 5-minute or 2-minute things or whatever. But that's really cool, man, to be able to get the word out like that and have that kind of audience. What other social media presence do you have?
There's a group of us called the Pro Labor Alliance. Mm-hmm. We just do a Facebook page right now and TikTok. It's mostly me on that one. But the other partner in crime was at the convention as well as a guest. That's it. Just TikTok and Facebook, Pro Labor Alliance. It started 10 years, about this point, it's like 15 years ago as something else, but now it's just a social media platform.
Right on. And it's for like the broader labor movement?
Yeah, it's just pro-labor news.
Right.
And like militant news, not just like an endorsement for Kamala Harris. It's like, these nurses went on strike. You should go to this picket line. Like stuff that's like very pro-labor.
Yeah, one of the things that I picked up from this union, from going to Tyler Vassar's Build a Fighting NALC, is I never really thought about it before Tyler, but the NALC should be a leader in the labor movement because we're one of the biggest labor unions in the country and we're maybe the most organized labor union in the country as far as percentage of people who are in the union. Go ahead.
And also, as a labor union, not many labor unions have a branch or a member in every state and every corner of the country. We are one of the few unions in the country of the United States that has members in every corner in every state.
Yeah, that's a great point. Our penetration is everywhere.
Yeah.
And it just now occurs to me, 4 minutes in, that you should probably introduce yourself. Like, we know your name now, John Murphy, but tell us about yourself.
All right, so I'm 3 years into the Postal Service. I'm just a rank and file member. I'm no title. I'm no shop steward, no president. I'm definitely no Corey Walton. My branch is 4716 out of Naples, Florida.
Oh, that explains your thick Florida accent.
No, I originally was in Boston, Massachusetts. I was in Carpenter's Local 40. Represent. So some of the skyscrapers that you walked by this week, I probably built them.
Right. So, that's awesome. So what I like about having John on the podcast is John is the intended audience for this podcast. You know, Corey's podcast obviously is aimed toward stewards, toward union officers, toward union leadership even. Whereas this has always been, the union officers make up maybe 10% of our total union membership because we have, you know, small stations that have stewards. So you might have five carriers in a station, and one of them's a steward. But you also have stations like mine where there's 75 carriers and there's two stewards. So we'll call it 10%, maybe less. So there's still this 90% of the union that needs information. And that's where this podcast is aimed. And so with that in mind, one of my goals has always been, A, make yourself discipline proof. B, give you the strength to fight back against management. And that's what I love about John Murphy, because he has a story about that. So, John, I'm going to yield the floor to you for a minute, and I'll help move things along as needed.
Yeah.
But tell your story.
All right. Not all of us, most of us probably at this point that listen to this, have been CCAs at one point in time. So we work Sundays. And back in, when was this, 20...
A couple years ago.
When I was a CCA, in Naples, Florida, so it's hot year round. Like even December when it says winter, it's like it's not snowing down here. So we did it. Something happened, and I typed it up on Facebook. So I'm just going to read this. That way, it's clear in my mind. So this is a Facebook post from a couple of years ago, and it starts with why I'm pro union. And why do I wear a Union Yes pin every day on my collar at work? This is why. Today, Sunday, August 21st, 12 of us CCAs clocked into work at 8:30 a.m. in Naples, Florida. The outside temperature was already in the mid-80s. Our labor union, the NALC, and management have agreed that the 10-minute morning break that the workers receive is to be taken inside the office. 30 minutes from the start of the workday. So today at 9 a.m., my alarm goes off for break. I announce to the workers it's break time. As I walk up and down the loading dock telling folks it's break time, a manager, a 204B, comes out of the office onto the loading dock and tells us there are no breaks on Sundays. I dismiss that. I continue walking into the office towards the break room. Three other coworkers join me, and we sit down on the chairs inside their air conditioning. 1 minute later, management is standing over us. As four of us are sitting down, he is saying we have two choices. Either one, take our morning 10-minute break after we load our packages into our truck and take our break outside in the heat, or two, go home. The four of us looked at each other in shock and all collectively at the same time said, we're going to go home. We clocked out and walked to our cars together. The temperature at 9 a.m. was already reading 85 degrees. The other coworkers were in shock and disbelief that the four of us were being sent home. Thanks to our union, the four of us left with a smile on our faces and our heads held high.
All right, so a couple things I want to note with this story. First of all, you were told either go do this or go home. So that, as I'm sure you had to make the argument, that is not a walkout, that is not a strike. You were instructed to either do this or that.
Yes.
And rather than bend over and capitulate to management's bogus instructions, they gave you a choice to go home, and that's what you did.
Yeah, the key thing that happened is the manager gave us a choice.
Right. And that's what makes it not a strike. We're obviously strictly forbidden from striking, and if that would have been a strike action, then the outcome would have been a lot different. So, kudos to you, taking the opportunity. Now, I can't imagine this pleased your supervisor.
No. Like I said, this was in 2022. This was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But from my recollection is, he was trying to pit us against the workers that were still working through their breaks.
Right.
And he goes,
like, they're the good ones.
They're the good ones.
Yeah.
So, if a third of us just left, he was saying, that third of more work is going to get dumped onto the union member, other workers.
Yeah.
And one of the coworkers, Derek, that walked out with us, he said they could always join us.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't have to work through their breaks. Mm-hmm. It's in our contract that we get breaks.
That's exactly right. And that's why we have a contract. And that's what the union is designed to fight for, is for the enforcement of that contract. Now, on our walk over here, you were telling me that you've organized in other jobs that you've had as well, where this is not your first union.
No, this is not my first union. 2006, I graduated from Minuteman Voc Tech School in Lexington, Massachusetts, where I studied for 4 years on my high school carpentry. 2006, I...
Now, the Minuteman, did you guys get that nickname because of your prowess on prom night?
No, it was because it's Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
But, yeah, so 2006, I graduated high school. In the fall, I got into the Carpenters Union, like I said previously, and I sat in my apprenticeship. Then I worked my way up into a journeyman, and then I became a steward and a delegate to local 40 state convention.
Nice.
So I was pretty familiar with, like, labor laws. And then from there, the big thing was... A few years after that, the recession happened and all the jobs dried up. So I went down to Cape Cod, Falmouth, Massachusetts, and I spent 2 years organizing a non-union grocery store. So I got familiar with federal labor laws and other labor laws.
Wow. So you were a union activist. Like, hey,
I would say I was a union organizer. I had 45% of that supermarket signed union cards.
Wow. Yeah. That's so great. And so that speaks to what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, that the NALC is part of this labor movement. And if you listen to my episode with Tyler Vassar, we talk about that a little bit, about what our role is now and what our role can be within the broader labor movement. We have, I would say, the strong have a duty to the weak. And so our union is strong.
Yes.
In as much as it has this good bargaining power, it's like somebody who's physically strong but won't open that jar of pickles for you. You know, that's the way our union feels right now, where they're not flexing those muscles. And we have an obligation within the labor movement to help other people to organize, to make sure that we stand out front and say, look at what we're doing, follow us. And go ahead.
Well, I've been wearing a hat all week at this convention. Like I said, I'm just a rank and file, and I'm up here at the convention, so it's possible for anyone to become a delegate. Hint, hint, 2026, LA.
Yeah.
If you're a CCA now, learn your bylaws. But anyways, I've been wearing this hat all week. It's the IWW, and the famous slogan is an injury.
What does that stand for, IWW?
It's the Industrial Workers of... The world,
yeah.
The slogan is an injury to one is an injury to all. And that is like a basic philosophy for all union members to have. If someone below you is getting injured, you stand with them.
That's right.
If you're a table one, you stand with table two. If you're a regular, you stand with the PTF. If you're a PTF, you stand with the CCAs.
Yeah, obviously I agree with that. You know, I take up for CCAs. That's a huge part of my mission with the podcast and as a union officer or as a union, you know, like a steward. And this convention, I know we're not really going to talk about the convention because I don't know when this episode will release,
but
it still feels like there's two unions. There's the old guard, the retirees who already got theirs. And then there's these young people who are struggling and want to stay in the post office, but to do that, we have to make our position stronger.
Yeah.
And so you're still fairly new. What do you know off the top of your head, like, what step you're at? Is it like D?
I think I'm C.
Step C.
Like, I think it's like 24.
Step C, table two.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm at step P. I'm at the top step. And so my experience in the post office is very different from yours. And that's something that, like, when... I don't remember who I was talking to on the... Oh, it was the other episode that hasn't dropped yet. That when I say, like, oh, management can go fuck themselves, that's really easy for me to say with 18 years in at step P. And that's what we have to remember, is that there are people, like our CCAs, I can tell them all day long what their rights are. But the fact is, management controls their schedule.
Yeah.
And if management wants to, they can just stop scheduling.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're effectively unemployed. So you take this action, you walk out, your supervisor tells you, you're either going to do what I tell you or you can go home. So you go home.
Yeah.
What happens next?
That was Sunday. So by Monday morning, I come in, I was on a hold down, but the hold down, the route that I was on doesn't have a T6. So they already said, like, come in and do that day.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, cool. So I show up and they're like, go to the other office because this is the NS day for that route. So he was like trying to punish me.
Right.
So yeah. I went to the other office, the main office where the postmaster is and the branch president, and they have already talked about this, what happened. And this was like 7 a.m. And I was like, all right, this is cool. And then they came to an understanding of an LMLOU, which is like a whole different other story. And then with me, back to me was, I did that day, then the next day.
Well, I want to explain a little bit what we're talking about here. So with an opt, management can't just not schedule you anymore. That's one of the beautiful things about being on an opt, and it's why I recommend it so strongly, because you actually have a set schedule when you're on an opt. So they don't have that avenue of retaliation open for you, at least while you're on your opt.
Yeah.
And then with the LMOU, the Local Memorandum of Understanding, that's where your rules about breaks come from.
Yes.
So we're entitled, the national agreement gives us two breaks and a 30-minute lunch, two 10-minute breaks, 30-minute lunch. And then in your local, that will determine whether that break can be taken in the office or whether they have to be taken out on the street. So in my branch, they're both taken on the street. But in your branch, local,
the morning.
Right, says that you have an office break in the morning. And so that's what that argument was really about, right? Maybe we should go back and kind of cover that a little bit, that the reason you wanted to take this office break at all is because you're entitled to it in your local.
Yeah, our local agreement is an office break in the morning.
Right, and so this is where knowing your rights serves you.
Yes.
And as a union guy, you're used to being able to flex those rights.
Yes.
All right, so that's where we get to where your union president and management have already talked about the local. They've already agreed on what the local says. All right, so now what happens next?
And then a few days later, the four of us get called in for an II.
Right.
Our steward's there. They give us the sheet, like the basic questions that everyone knows the questions.
Well, we don't know the questions for if you stage a walkout.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you remember what any of that stuff was?
One of the main questions was, did you plan this ahead of time?
Oh, because now it becomes a strike action.
It would be like entrapment or something.
Yeah.
But it was like, no. We did not plan this. It's like in my office, you could probably ask anyone, like, who's John Murphy? And they're going to be like, it's fucking the union crazy guy that knows everything. But once I got in and I realized from day one, you know you need a union with the post office. Oh. From day one.
Because management is so dysfunctional.
It's like you're at the academy. They go, okay, you get paid for mileage or whatever. Then you go the first weekend of work, you're like, I didn't get paid for mileage. Like, oh, tough luck. And it's like, what? So you learn from day one as a CCA that you need a union.
Yeah.
And coming from a union background, I was like, all right, it is my duty as a union member to learn my contract. So I read the JCAM, I read the M41 and the M39 for starters.
Wow.
And from that knowledge.
Hey, and this was before the Classes of Mail podcast, so you had to actually read it on your own. Now, let me ask you this. In the JCAM, when there's the boxed language that separates itself, the actual contractual language, did you read that in a funny accent?
No.
Oh, man. See, no. I should have known right from the beginning. Don't bother doing that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, that's all right. Next time I go through, I won't do that.
Yeah.
All right, so go on.
So when I first became a worker at the Postal Service and working down in Naples, I was like, I need to educate myself. And like, you would go and talk to people. You would talk to like people that have been there for like 10 years about stuff, and it's like all hearsay.
Right.
And it's like, do you actually know anything?
100%.
And it's, I don't know, ask the steward. And it's like, yeah, but you've been here for 20 years. You don't even know, like, the basic things?
Right.
No. And so I was like, all right, I need to educate myself to help my coworkers out. Because I can't just go make this a career and then have the other 52 routes in my office be downgraded, themselves be downgraded for not knowing the basic principles of our job. That is one of the things where the M41 comes in handy and the JCAM comes in handy.
Right, because that tells you, the M41 tells you the right way to do the job. So that you can't get in trouble. And the JCAM tells you your rights.
Yes.
Yep, that's absolutely critical. And a lot of just the nuts and bolts of how the job works. Like with Article 41 in the JCAM, in the contract, that'll tell you like how to do an opt, for example. That's covered in that. And then it may be covered in your local as well. So yeah, all that information is critical to protecting yourself and having the best possible chance of standing up to management. Yeah. All right, so you go in for the investigative interview, and now it's up to management whether they're going to issue discipline or not.
Yes.
What did they do?
We had no discipline.
Look at that. No discipline. So you must have successfully made the argument that, hey, I was given the option to go home, and I went home.
Yeah, it was the key thing is the choice.
Right.
I don't want anyone to think, like, this is like...
It's not a strike act.
Yeah.
Dude. Let me make this crystal clear. We are not allowed to strike. Yeah. You can't advocate for a strike. You can't plan a strike. You can't any of that shit. And until something changes in federal law, it's going to stay that way.
So I give it up to my steward. I believe it was my steward or my branch president. When they turned around and asked the manager, like, did you give these workers a choice to go home and go back to work? Beautiful. And the manager goes, yes, I did.
That's it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So it was very, like, very empowering at that point.
Yeah.
A week later, that we won.
That's it.
Right. Not only did we win our jobs back, because everyone's like, it's a strike. So it wasn't even threatening, but, like, you as a CCA, as in the back of your head, that, like, I'm going to get fired.
Right.
So, like, all week I was stressing about it. I was texting a couple of the Joes on the Facebook groups. Shout out to those two. I'm not going to name the last names because they already know who they are. But
yeah, they did it, man. And that's what the union is here for. And that's, again, why it's so important to know your rights, know what labor laws are.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have our contract and we have our rights there, but also labor laws apply to the post office. You know, and things like union busting, that applies to the post office. We have additional rights aside from the ones that are ensconced in our contract. So kudos to you, man. Credit to you.
And it's like, it's like if you're a CCA or a PTF out there, or even if you're just a regular that's listening to this podcast, which is amazing, take the information that you learn, pass it off to your coworker, like on your breaks before you clock in, or like while you're casing, just talk about stuff. Like, you got to pass this knowledge on. And that is the one thing our union is very behind on. That is why podcasts like these and other social media platforms are taking off. Because our union as a national is not doing a good job educating the rank and file.
Right.
So if you're a CCA, please help out your other coworkers.
Mm-hmm. We have that problem. You know, the reason the podcast started is because postal education coming from management about how to do our job is totally lacking. And so that's why this podcast started. But it's also true within our union that focus on education is totally lacking, which is why there's ADA arbitration on the workroom floor, you know, all these other podcasts as well, because we need to lift each other up. We need that empowerment. All right. So now, before I let you go, I want to talk about your experience as a CCA and how things are now for CCAs where you're working. So first, you know, for you going through as somebody who knows your rights, was there blowback down the road for you being aggressive as a CCA?
I wouldn't say there was blowback.
Good.
People got some regulars, old school regulars that have been there for 30 years. They're like, can you shut the fuck up about knowing so much? Like, just don't rock the boat. It's right. Fine. But it's like the boat's already being rocked. Like, management's doing this to us. We're not doing it to the managers.
Management is the one rocking the boat. Yeah. We have a national agreement
that
both parties agreed to. And if they would abide by it, then there would be no boat rocking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
And
absolutely.
I want to say, though, so I'm at the convention now, and I've had, through this week, I've probably had at least 10 people text me for updates on the contract and what's going on up here.
Yeah.
And one of the things is, I want to emphasize this, they're texting me not because I'm a delegate, but because they trust me. And they trust me because they elected me to be a delegate here. And why did they elect me? It's because on the shop floor, I'm trustworthy and I give the information. Like, when they need help, I help them without even questioning anything. And I'm never looking for a thank you or anything.
That's beautiful, man. That's what we need. All right. So now tell me, in your state, how many routes are in your station?
I believe 53.
53. All right. So that works out to maybe 70 carriers, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Maybe
a little bit.
Maybe 80 with CCAs. How many CCAs do you have? Just roughly. Maybe a dozen?
Usually we have 12. Then a couple of months ago, we were down to like 6. And now we're back up to like maybe 12, but we don't know how that's going to last.
Yeah, so that's what I want to talk about. So obviously you're having the same turnover problem that we're having everywhere. That CCAs don't want to stay. And there's good reasons for that. The main one being, well, it's not the main one. It's one of the big factors is the pay. And there's really not a lot we can do about that. It's in the hands of Brian Renfro.
No. There's not. We can't do much, but there is things CCAs can do
regarding their pay.
They're regarding their pay.
All right, I'm listening.
I see CCAs on social media, at work, I hear them talking. They work through their breaks. They take their pisses at lunchtime. All that time adds up. If you work through your breaks, if you work through your breaks and your lunches by the end of that year, you have lost thousands of dollars, and that is what your pay raise will be.
That's exactly right. That's such a great point. And that's why I wanted you on, is to talk from that experience. You know, that you're taking money out of your own pocket. Yeah. And you're decreasing quality of life as well, because you get exhausted, you never get a break, and man, I just can't stop moving out here. Yeah, you take your breaks, you take your lunch. You're exactly right about that. And that does increase your pay, because they're not paying you for that time. So don't work during those times. Yep. All right. So that's fantastic. All right. So I take back what I said about CCA pay, because you are exactly right. Now, working conditions is the other thing that drives CCAs out. So how is that? What's your impression of working conditions right now where you are for CCAs?
The working conditions nationwide, they're all starting at 10 a.m. on Sundays, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty typical.
So if you're starting at 10 a.m., you're not getting done with an 8-hour day until the evening when the sun is setting.
Right.
And the only reason why this has been implemented is because management wants these CCAs, not all of them, they know they're not going to get all, but they want a small percentage of them to become runners. They want you to run through your breaks and lunches so you get to go home in the evening sooner to be with your family, because you know you're working Monday through Saturday running those other routes. Right. So management knows that you're going to be running on Sundays through your breaks and lunches. And the working conditions is not just Sundays, it's through the weeks too, because Monday through Saturday, you're getting scheduled to come in at 10 a.m. The route's already cased and pulled down, and then you go, oh, follow the DPS. And you're out there like, okay. And then you're getting lost. You've never done it before.
That's right.
And the manager's texting you through the cell phone or calling you like, what's taking you so long? Get back here and later and just quit. They're just starting to learn a route, and management is just turning around, telling them to quit, that they suck. Meanwhile, we're understaffed almost all through the country. I'm in Naples, Florida. This is our down season. All the snowbirds are up here in Ohio, Massachusetts, everywhere. And we're still working 50 hours a week. And it's like,
yeah, what's going to happen when all the snowbirds come back?
Exactly.
So, and then we have political season coming up, which is going to be bonkers with the mail, and then follow that right up with Christmas. So wouldn't you like to think that they would be embracing whatever CCAs they have and trying to keep them? But it sure doesn't seem that way. So what's your advice to CCAs who are getting leaned on like that? You've already said make sure you take your breaks and your lunch, but how do you deal with it emotionally when management leans on you like that?
When I was in the Carpenters Union, we have a mentoring program, and I was one of the mentors. Every mentor had five new apprentices, and you contacted them once a month. But I don't suggest that for anyone. Like, that's a whole nationwide issue. But if you're a CCA coming in through the academy and you notice there's another CCA with you in that academy and you're both going to that same office, get their phone numbers. Start a little chat group. Once you're in on Sundays, your managers are probably making one big chat like, let's have updates, even though they know how many scans you already did. So create your own little chat group and just throughout the week or throughout the day, just be like, dude, this sucks. Like, it's hot. Like, are we done yet? Like, I can't wait till I go home and actually eat, like, a burrito or something.
Right. Just somebody who can sympathize with you, empathize with you, knows what you're going through.
Like, having a chat group, that's what a bunch of us did. I assume hopefully others. Like, it allows you to, like, relieve your mental stress, the anxiety of just work, work, work. You stop for a second. You just send a text message. Like, if you're delivering by the beach, like, oh, I just saw a dolphin or something like that.
Right. And it also helps for practical reasons, because you can be like, hey, I'm on Route 22 and I can't find the mailboxes at this apartment. Does anybody know where they are? And then they can tell you, oh, yeah, they're back by the pool. And while you're there, there's a clean bathroom there, too. You know, stuff like that. Yeah, that's great advice.
One of the last things I'll finish with is the union meetings, right? No one wants to go to these things, get talked to. You go there, you're 8 hours done from work. You're sweating. You're hot. You go to the meetings. And you get talked to, not a lot of discussion for CCAs, because you're like, I don't know who the hell any of these people are. I don't even know what we're talking about. Like TSP, I don't even have that thing. So if you're a CCA, get another CCA or two. Attend your union meeting at least once a year. It's your union. And my thing is, as an organizer, you have to build a rapport with your coworkers. And I don't advocate in getting drunk, but before you go to the union meeting, go in the parking lot and have like a beer or two, crack it open. Like, it's a good icebreaker. That way it gets the workday pass out of your system, and then you build the brotherhood, the sisterhood of what a union is.
That's right. Yeah, those social events, those gatherings, like the meetings, are how you build that outside of the workroom floor. You know, seeing somebody without their mailman costume on, and where you can crack a beer, where you can crack a joke, where you don't have to worry about management being over your shoulder all the time. That's where that brotherhood comes from. And that's what's been happening for me here at this convention. Is if you were a CCA at my station, our relationship is going to be different from what's built up here. Because I'm always worrying about what's management saying to you, what are your rights, how are things going out there. But here we can just connect as people.
Yeah.
People who have this shared experience. Go ahead.
It like you're working during the day and all you're talking about is mail, mail, mail.
Oh, that's but, what we're talking about here too.
Yeah, but like after work, if you go to the convenience store right before a union meeting, or like if you live down the street from the CCA, like go hang out with that person, hang out with your coworker, get to know them. Like maybe that you guys have the same pets. Like maybe you both have a poodle, or maybe you both have kids in the same school. Like you got to build up the rapport to help you survive this job, or else you're going to just go through the CCA, the PTF life, like just running and constantly faring like you're by yourself. But as long as you're checking in with others, you're not alone.
That's it. You know, those other CCAs, they know the struggle. They're going through the same crap you are. And that's what it is, being that brother, being that sister. And that's being a union. I cannot thank you enough for coming on to Classes of Mail. People need to hear voices like yours, especially the newer carriers who are going through the struggle, to know that the union can have their back and why the union is important. Thank you for the advice. Thank you for taking the time. And thanks for coming on Classes of Mail.
Thank you.
All right. That's all we got for today. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll catch you next time.